The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Good morning and welcome to the Turley Frequency here on Archangel Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Turley, and for the next 2 hours, we'll be entertaining, edifying, and hopefully illuminating. Today on the show, we meet Ron James, who is a filmmaker and a truth seeker, and whose latest film suggests that there is an advanced intelligence interacting with humanity. Yes, we find out more in the next segment. Top of the hour, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text us your prayer requests, the large ones, the small ones, and everything in between. Text me now on 251-928-2111. The lines are open right now. Finally, today we conclude the story of Mother Caprini and her unexpected mission to the United States of America. Stick around to the last segment to find out more. Okay, with all this good stuff, I suppose we'd better get this show on the road. Good morning and welcome to this Tuesday morning. I had to look at the calendar this morning to work out what day it was today. I don't know about you, but all the days, all the weeks, all the months start to seem to run into each other. Or is it just me? Maybe it's my age. Now, you know that something's happening when the news makes the news. And anybody waking up in the United States this morning, or certainly yesterday, even in the evening, would have been aware that Tucker Carlson has left Fox News. If you've just discovered that from me, well, you are not a news hound. You are not somebody who is watching the 24-hour news cycle, of which Tucker Carlson was very much part. It's a very interesting development, partly because it was so unexpected. So unexpected that on Friday night, when Tucker signed off on his final weekday show last Friday, he said, "I'll see you Monday." There was no expectation on his part that he would not be on air Monday night, giving his usual synopsis of the day's political events and world events. Instead, on Monday or Sunday, Monday, there was a terse statement, it's been described as, from Fox News, which basically said that Tucker and the network had parted ways. Now, I don't know about you, but it sounds like lovers breaking up, parted ways, you know. We go our separate ways, as Elvis and Willie Nelson used to sing. But they did. They've gone their separate ways. What's more interesting as well is what's happening in the background with Fox News. Again, anybody who's been listening to the news for the last few weeks will know that Fox News has been making the news. And again, for all the wrong reasons. Dominion voting systems took them to court over claims about the 2020 election. Now, I'm not going to enter into the affray of discussing the claims, counterclaims, etc., etc. That's somebody else's department, not mine. But what I do know is when you're taken to court in that sort of a situation, then it's a pretty serious matter. And it was even more serious for Fox, so much so that they settled with Dominion Voting Systems prior to the matter going before a jury. And it cost them nearly $800 million. Now, $800 million to you, me, and to Archangel Radio is a vast amount of money. But obviously to Fox News, it's loose change. It's the sort of stuff they have in a drawer somewhere and they can take out and a hand to whoever's accusing them. But $800 million, or nearly $800 million, is a lot of money to lose. But here's the thing. They almost lost the exact same amount of money simply by getting rid of Tucker Carlson. In just a few hours after the announcement, $500 million were wiped off the company's shares. The Fox Corporation sank by 5.4% in terms of value in a matter of hours. Okay, so $700 million last week, $500 million today or thereabouts because of Tucker Carlson. That's a lot of money to be losing. I don't know about you, but it tells me that all is not well on the good ship Fox News. Now, as many of you know, Fox News is owned by Rupert Murdoch. And we talked about Rupert Murdoch a few weeks ago. Do you remember? This is a man who's been married multiple times, but is getting married again. So what, I hear you say. And people like that often have multiple marriages, and he's getting married again. He's 94. He's getting married again. And we joked a little bit about it. It was the ultimate triumph of hope over experience. But he's at the helm of all of this. Okay, he's making decisions. And it seems from what I've read, and there's lots of conflicting reports because there's nothing definite, nothing definitive from either Fox or Tucker. But did Tucker leave or was he sacked? And the synopsis of what I've read so far would seem to suggest that he was fired, which is even more confusing, even more mystifying in a sense. Why would you fire the news anchor who is your star? Now, by any measure, Tucker Carlson was the biggest star in the Fox News firmament. Everybody had heard of Tucker Carlson, even this side of the Atlantic. People were familiar with Tucker Carlson. He was a huge star. And he was very good at what he did. Every night he would go on and he would dissect the politics of the day, the machinations of various politicians and their double dealing or whatever. He was very good at it. He was entertaining. He wasn't just somebody who understood politics, though. He was a very, very effective broadcaster. Maybe it's because of working in the media world. Whenever I consume media, I think is the word they use these days, I'm often consuming two things. Like you, I'm consuming facts and information, but I'm also watching how they're delivering what it is they're broadcasting, be it on the radio. I don't have a television, but I look at things on YouTube. And what I could see from Tucker Carlson is that he ticked all the boxes. He delivered interesting content in an interesting way. And he communicated it in a way that was very, very accessible. He's the kind of broadcaster that news corporations, media entities look for. And when they get them, they tend to hold on to them because they know that they are very, very special. Not so, it seems, with Fox News. They decided to cut and go, send Tucker out into the desert, the wilderness of media. Well, maybe they thought that. I'm not so sure that that's what's going to happen, but I'll come back to that in a moment. But I think what it also shows, from what I've read, is that Fox News is being run by the Murdochs, plural, not just Rupert Murdoch. And it seems that his son had a hand in this sacking of Tucker Carlson. And it may be, you know, he's roughly the same age as Tucker Carlson. You never underestimate, especially when men are involved, how much ego sometimes enters into the equation. And sometimes people and corporations battle it out together. And maybe they had decided that Tucker was too big for his boots and he had to be sacked. Now, the other thing was that at the time of his sacking, they were actually renegotiating his latest contract deal, which, again, is not unusual. These sort of media deals come up often or pretty regularly. But there was talk that Tucker Carlson was negotiating a deal that would last until 2029. So a sort of 5-year, 6-year deal was the norm for this sort of thing. So maybe he was asking too much. But maybe deliberately he was asking too much because he wanted out. So we don't know the thinking behind this. We don't know really who decided what. Megyn Kelly, who used to be a Fox News presenter and then left, she left in a slightly more amicable way. She wanted to spend time bringing up her young family. And soon after that, when she did bring up her family, she returned to Sirius XM, the radio satellite radio station network across the United States. And she's also been a bit of a hit on YouTube. She has a YouTube channel. I often look at some of her analyses. I think she's probably better on the radio than on the television, but that's just my view. But she, understanding the inner workings of Fox and knowing Tucker a little bit, she was candid enough to say she knew him, but she wasn't a friend of his, but she knew him and she knew the world he worked in. She was of the opinion that it was the worst decision that Fox News had ever made. For the sorts of reasons that I've just been discussing. That they would lose an audience, they had killed their star attraction, and inevitably, Tucker Carlson would go elsewhere. I agree 100% with Megyn. Tucker Carlson can go anywhere he likes. I heard one commentator this morning suggesting that CNN, yes, CNN, would be phoning him nonstop on speed dial to try and attract him to CNN. Why, I hear you ask? Well, he's a name. He will attract an audience. And maybe CNN, who are also having problems with trying to attract an audience, at the end of the day, when it comes to media, people are just interested in getting an audience. I remember when I was working in the film world, I had a chat or multiple chats with film producers. And I talked to them about my desire to make films that were edifying, that would help people and be not exploitative of individuals, et cetera, et cetera. And it was really surprising, the reactions. I thought people would say, no, we don't want that. We're not interested in your theories, your philosophizing, your religion. But they couldn't care less. They had one mantra, every single one of them. And it was, if you can sell tickets, we will fund it. If there's an audience for it, we will set it up for you. So in the world of media, it's very, very superficial. If you can attract an audience, you're in. If you don't attract an audience, you're out. Now, it doesn't really matter sometimes what it is you're saying. But I think CNN might be a bit of a stretch when it comes to the Tucker Carlson story. But he will go somewhere, be under no doubts. He's still a youngish man. He's still in his early 50s. He looks well on it. I heard somebody today rather surprised he was in his 50s. They said he looked as if he was in his 30s. It may be something to do with the fact that he gave up smoking a very long time ago and he quit drinking back in 2002, I discovered this morning. And also the fact that he is married to the one woman all his life and goes to church regularly, Episcopalian. Which leads me to another interesting part of this over weekend saga around Tucker Carlson and Fox News, because Tucker Carlson gave a very, very interesting speech at the weekend. It was to the Heritage Foundation. And during it, he talked about the state of the United States today. And obviously, a bit like his television show, he did not pull his punches. He called it out, as they say. But what Tucker Carlson increasingly has been doing, and what I've been picking up on, is that, yes, he calls it out in terms of its politics, in terms of its sociology, in terms of the philosophies, the ideologies that are fueling a lot of the problems of the United States. But interestingly, his solution is a spiritual one, increasingly. So much so that at the weekend at the Heritage Foundation, he exhorted his audience, if they really wanted to help the United States of America, then they should pray for it. 10 minutes per day. Now, what I like about Tucker is that he's quite sort of, although he's a very smart guy, he's also, he knows his audience. So he did then footnote those comments by saying that he was an Episcopalian, and therefore his comments had very little theological value. He is an Episcopalian, I think, by his ethnicity, I guess, or where he's come from. His wife actually introduced him to the whole Episcopalian church. And he says he doesn't really agree with their views on abortion, same sex, et cetera, et cetera. But he likes their liturgy. He likes the beauty of their liturgy. So it seems to me that there's a Christian dimension to Tucker Carlson. But I want to make a prediction today, two predictions, in fact. And this show may not last long enough for these predictions to ever come back to haunt me, so I'm very happy to make them. And they are these. The first is that Tucker Carlson will go on to something even bigger and brighter than Fox News. I can absolutely guarantee you that. Whether it's he does a Joe Rogan type deal with Spotify or somebody like that and has his own podcast, his own TV show on YouTube or whatever, whatever, he will not miss an audience. Fox News will lose an audience. Tucker will take his audience wherever Tucker decides to place it. And the second prediction is this. I predict, just listening to him and looking at him over the last few months, it's only a matter of time before Tucker Carlson becomes a Catholic. Why do I say that? Because of how he is identifying not just the problems in society, but also the solution. And he's too smart a guy not to know where the ultimate lies in terms of solutions. So there are my predictions. Call me, 888-928-0881, and let's see what you think. I hear the phone lines are now open and active. Reed, who have we got on the line?
Not sure yet, Kevin. I'll go ahead and put them in for you, and we'll find out.
Excellent.
Turley, Mr. Turley.
Hello, you're through to the Turley frequency. Is that Claude, yes. I hear?
Hello, yes, Kevin. I've been trying to call you for the past couple of weeks now. Is something wrong with your phone? Do you have issues, or are you just trying to block me out? Do you see my New York number and just say, oh, let's not talk with him today because he's going to bring up another issue about the Catholic Church?
Claude, you are always welcome on this show. You know that. You can call me every day if you like, 888-928-0881. What's on your mind today?
Oh, there's a lot of things on my mind today. First of all, you had a guest on last week sometime, a gentleman, I believe, who went to a Bible college and then became Catholic.
That's right, Carl Olson, editor of the Catholic World Report, amongst many other things.
You need to tell your friend, Mr. Olson, to get his money back from that Bible college because clearly it didn't do the job. Clearly they weren't doing the job if he left to become a Catholic. Because you don't even read the Bible. You were talking about the resurrection and then you take him off the cross for a couple of days or a day, and then you put him back on the cross, and then you're right back to square one, and then you got all these statues. But I'm going to let you address that first. Why do you do this? Why do you put him back on the cross? He's risen, don't you know?
We definitely do know that he's risen, Claude, and we celebrate it in big time style every single Easter. And I'm glad that you follow the calendar, which the church has, the church's liturgical year. Absolutely. We are in no doubt of that. But a crucifix to us is a reminder of Christ's sacrifice. It's a reminder of his love for you and for me, Claude. And it's not really about whether there's a little figurine on a cross or not. The fact is, Christ is risen. Hallelujah.
I understand that. I get that. But why don't you celebrate the fact that he's risen? Why do you need to put him back on the cross again? This makes no sense. He's risen. Well, he's forgiven your sins.
Let me quote to you St. Paul. Claude, from the 1 Corinthians 1, chapter 1, verse 23. We proclaim Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. Now that's St. Paul, the great apostle of the Gentiles, proclaiming Christ crucified. Well, every single crucifix also proclaims Christ crucified.
Okay, where is this again? I'm going to look this up. I don't remember reading this in my Bible.
1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 23. It's absolutely there. I can assure you of that. And by the way, Catholics do read the Bible every single day. We read it at Mass. We read it in the liturgy of the Church, in the Divine Office. We're never done reading the Bible. We love the Bible. And guess who gave us the Bible, Claude? It was the Church.
You need to look at it more closely this time.
Well, listen, Claude, call again and let's continue this discussion. I'm really enjoying it. Now, when we come back, we will be meeting Ron James, who is a filmmaker and a seeker after truth. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. Exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm Kevin Turley, your host, and it's very, very good to have your company this morning. I hope your Tuesday is going well. Now, my next guest is Ron James, who is a filmmaker, a writer, an editor, researcher, content creator, and entrepreneur. He is also the director of media relations for MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network. He is the co-founder of MUFON Television, an online TV channel boasting the world's largest collection of commercial-free UAP-related material. And in his time there, he has created 7 feature-length documentaries and dozens of original independent series episodes. Now, his latest film is called Accidental Truth, UFO Revelations, and it deals, I guess, with some of the official pronouncements, or that's the springboard for it, that have come from the Pentagon in the last few years, which seem to be suggesting a move in the official mood music, which is taking people away from a sort of healthy skepticism to almost the point where they're inviting people to start to believe that there may be visitors from beyond. The strapline of the film is as follows. The truth can no longer be contained by those duty-bound to hide it. Officials who interact with the public regarding the UFO question openly acknowledge that they know things that they can't reveal. It then goes on to say, in an Accidental Truth, UFO Revelations, the reality of an advanced intelligence engaging with humanity becomes undeniably clear. Ron James joins me down the line this morning. Ron, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Thank you for having me on.
There's some really, really interesting claims. I don't know who wrote your strapline, but it got me hooked, that's for sure.
Well, I actually wrote that myself.
And, well done.
So I wasn't too familiar with the approach of your channel, and your show, but I'm kind of getting an idea what it's about. And, you know, it's very, very interesting because traditional Christian and other religious beliefs do not clash with the idea that there is life in outer space and even that it's interacting with us here on Earth.
No, not at all. In fact, Ron, I don't know if you're familiar with Professor Paul Thigpen. Are you familiar with that name?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Well, he's been a guest on this show at least once. And Paul, just last year, published a book called The Extraterrestrials and the Catholic Church. I think you'd find it absolutely fascinating because he documents quite clearly how church fathers, saints, and philosophers down the age have dealt with this issue about some kind of other intelligence interacting with us in various shapes and ways. I guess the question really, Ron, is what is that intelligence and what is its purpose? And obviously Catholics, Christians have very, very clearly defined cosmologies, if I can say. But let's just park that for a moment. So there's absolutely no problem with that. And like you, I love the idea that we're all seeking truth. That's what we should all be seeking. As a Christian, we believe our Lord is the truth, the way and the life. So whatever comes our way, we can look at it through the Christian prism without any fear whatsoever. So listen, tell me, where did this film start to gel in your mind? How did it come about?
Well, I've been kind of kicking around the UFO field for a long time, just like you guys, looking for what the answer to this may be. And we're starting to learn that it could be a very wide variety of different things, which is interesting. But I'd been interviewing people since 2008, and I sat down with Lou Elizondo shortly after he came forward stating that he had worked with the Pentagon to run a secret UFO program that nobody knew about. And during the interview, he had an awkward response to a question that I asked him, because I basically said, so Lou, have you looked at maybe an interdimensional element to this? And his answer was, we really can't exclude anything. We have looked at whether they come from another time, another space, whether they're here on Earth, whether they come from another dimension, whether physical, or they could be coming from another planet, or they could have been here all along. And I said to him, I said, well, Lou, it seems like out of the possibilities that you're stating, the only thing you're sure of is that there is an actual they. And that just stopped him in his tracks. And his response was, you know, I can't go any further with that. And I thought to myself, okay, you know, I've been working on making my next UFO film, and I think I have the statement I need to build it around. And over time, I got other people that are very high up in studying this stuff to make similar mistakes, which is why the film's called Accidental Truth, because a lot of these guys didn't mean to tell us the things that are revealed in the film.
I mean, you will know, Ron, as well as I, that the kind of ideas of an official cover-up about UFOs is as old as the hills, right? And if we just sort of take our starting point from the end of the Second World War, Roswell and various other incidents, even the sort of Washington, the episodes over Washington, D.C. with UFOs and subsequent media blackouts on it and stuff, this is not quite – there's nothing sort of shockingly new in this, is there, that governments sometimes do hide inconvenient facts?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The film illustrates that the story that we were told in 2017 is really an echo of an exact same story that was being told in the 50s by General John Samford. And we illustrate in the film that the things that he was stating publicly are almost a verbatim copy of the things that were being stated publicly in 2017. And that everything basically from that they're talking about post Roswell, Project Blue Book, the ideas, they're telling us this new story that there was nothing going on with research and study into the UFO phenomenon until the new program that they're admitting. But the film is all about peeling away the onion skin and showing that that is a complete lie, and that there has been tremendous amounts of study, research, government programs compartmentalized inside industry, all of which was alive and well during this period. And then we go on further to reveal some of the things we're able to uncover that they discovered, some of the technology they looked at. And then as the film concludes, there is a lot of study into consciousness. And so we'll just leave it at that and go on to the next question.
Well, it's interesting we leave it at consciousness. I mean, because yesterday we had David J. Halperin on. Do you know David J. Halperin and his work?
Okay, I'm a little more familiar.
Sorry. He's written a very fascinating book called The Intimate Alien, and it's all about UFO as a sort of mythos, you know, and he's very much into the idea of consciousness around UFO revelations and that type of thing. But, I mean, did you, in making this film, were people I haven't seen the film, obviously, so I'm sort of working in the dark here a little bit. But were people willing to go on record and state what they really thought? Because that's been one of the things that's bedeviled this sort of subject for years, that it's sort of innuendo and people briefing off the record. But were people willing to nail their colors to the mast and say, yes, this is what I saw, this is what happened, this is why it happened in this way?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that the film's exploring, is that we have gotten right up to the point of official admission of aliens or whatever it is, but they're not willing to go there. Nobody's willing to go there officially, and we start to explore why that is. And Lou Elizondo told me it's not in the film, but one of the things that he shared with me is that when he was really pushing for some sort of official disclosure, he was pushing for more attention from the other people inside the Department of Defense and inside of government, that he was amazed at the amount of people inside of government who believed that what we're seeing is some sort of demonic activity and that we needed to leave it alone, and that this was rampant within within the military, and it was an established attitude. And I know that a lot of people in the church have the same idea that we're dealing with demonic entities, and that that this is something that we're just totally have no clue what we're seeing. My feeling lies that is somewhere that says, you know, that might be true, but there's also other elements to it. But these things have come up, and one of the reasons he reached so much resistance inside government to continue funding the program is because of that belief running within high ranks in the military.
I mean, that's really quite remarkable, just what you've said there, Ron, and in terms of the demonic as well. I mean, there is a whole school of Christian thought which sees the extraterrestrial possibilities as fallen angels. I'm sure you're familiar with that, the Nephilim, and all of that. Is that the sort of thing that they were alluding to?
It is. And, you know, I'm before this interview is over, I don't know how much time we have, I'm going to knock your socks off with some interesting observations and possibilities.
Well, I tell you what, Ron, let's pause here for our break, which we have to take at some point, because you've set it up nicely. If anybody dares to touch the tuner after what Ron just said, I'd be very, very surprised. So you're listening to Ron James, who's a filmmaker, and his new film, Accidental Truth, UFO Revelations, is just being released, and he is in conversation with me this morning. And we will be back right after these words. The Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio this morning. My guest is Ron James, who is a filmmaker, a writer, and much more besides, but he's also director of media relations for MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network. His latest film is called Accidental Truth, UFO Revelations, and really comes about because of a New York Times article in 2017, which disclosed that perhaps the US government was more interested in UFOs than it had thus far been stating. Ron, you left us very nicely queued up, saying that you were about to blow my socks with certain revelations or certain insights into this phenomena. The floor is yours, my friend.
Well, you know, first let me just kind of clarify what MUFON is. That stands for the Mutual UFO Network, and this is an organization of nearly 7,000 people all over the world that are dedicated to the scientific understanding of UFOs for the benefit of humanity. And for 55 years, we've been studying case reports of UFOs, and also, more interestingly, and probably to your audience too, is what we call the experiencer phenomenon. And this is people that are having encounters with non-human beings that simply cannot explain it. And some people say, well, yeah, that's alien encounters. Some people will have an angelic encounter, a demonic encounter, a spiritually transformative experience, a near-death experience. All of these different types of experiences that they can't explain, B, they're forever changed by them, and C, there is nothing that once this has happened to somebody, you can convince them that it didn't happen. And what we're starting to understand is that there are mechanisms within physical reality that make these things possible. And rather, it is what one experiences as an encounter with an extraterrestrial Rather, it is what somebody experiences as an angelic encounter, demonic encounter, near-death experience. It's all being triggered by the same kind of mechanisms that allow these things to be experienced by us inside this reality. So you may have an encounter with some sort of being for whatever reason. There might be whatever motivation behind it. There might be whatever force behind it. But from a scientific standpoint, in the way consciousness and the energetic fabric of reality interacts with the mind, it's a lot of it is being made possible by the same phenomenon and by the same acts mechanisms.
Are you suggesting then, Ron, in a sense that the experience is kind of an organic element within our own consciousness? It's just interpreted in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, well, wait a minute. No, I was actually taken from my house on board a physical spaceship. Really? Are you sure? What we're learning is that, you know, we have what we call our consensus reality. And that is the reality that we could all agree on. Because in order for us to function inside this reality, which, by the way, almost all of traditional religions, including biblical religions, state that this reality is an illusion and that we are spiritual beings here having a human experience. So science is catching up with some of the earliest philosophies, and that is an extraordinary thing. And so, yes, what we're saying is that we have collective reality that we all agree on. So we're living on a planet Earth with blue skies and green grass. And if we walk, our feet hit something solid. And if we knock on a piece of wood, it's wood. But there's also subjective reality, which is where each one of us are experiencing our own variation. And inside the possibilities of that variation are numerous phenomena capable. And so what we're seeing is that somebody could be standing on a beach looking at a UFO and somebody else could see a seagull. And there is no real reason to say that either one of them was wrong. And it's pointing to a whole new understanding of our reality. It's pointing to something that really doesn't need to continue to have this black or white, it's one way or another perception, because subjective reality makes it possible for multiple things to be possible at the same time.
The only problem with that, though, I mean, because that idea of sort of a subjective reality is not that new. I mean, philosophers talked about this in a sense many, many centuries ago. But the problem with that sort of the ultimate truth of subjectivity is that then there's no objectivity ultimately.
Well, I think that what's really going on from a spiritual level above us, you know, several layers up, is kind of beyond our pay grade. We can be at the point where we're saying, well, God is all that is, and we can kind of level ourselves up to that perception where we can see that that's possible and we can rationalize it within what we know about reality. But then you come into the statement of, well, who created that and what created that? And that's where I don't think that we're equipped as human beings to even be able to rationally address that question. And so,
Sorry, forgive me, Ron. There's so much interesting things you're saying. I keep wanting to engage with you on them. You're listening to the voice of Ron James, who is a filmmaker and is the director of Accidental Truth, UFO Revelations. I mean, we're probably not going to agree on the spiritual sphere for obvious reasons, but just moving that aside for a moment, in terms of the ultimate destination of where this film points us to. I mean, there may be sort of things that we can agree on, but that, you know, the reality of an advanced intelligence engaging with humanity, again, I mean, you know, for Christians in general, that's not going to be an issue. The issue would be whether that advanced intelligence is benign or has other intentions.
Well, there's a lot of things pointing to multiple phenomena at work here. So, you know, just like here on planet Earth, we have different factions and different levels of people that are, you know, diametrically opposed to their approach to humanity, religion, to life, to anything. There's a possibility that there are spacefaring physical species that have Earth on their radar screen that have different ideas on what this planet is good for. There is also the whole spiritual element of it, where you have spiritual beings such as angels and demons, for lack of a better phrase, that have different agendas for each one of us. And then there's also all kinds of other types of life that we might not even know exist. So the closing part of the film is, well, is it aliens? Possibly, but that doesn't explain everything that we're seeing. And it certainly doesn't explain, it just doesn't explain all the phenomena at work. And so just to say that UFOs are aliens, and now we can prove it, is a completely naive discussion. And so that we point out in the film is that, look, even the Catholic Church has said there's probably life in outer space, and that doesn't really contradict our perception of God or our place in the universe. And if we discover that that's true, that's not going to be a big deal. And that's great that they say that, because there probably is life in outer space, and there probably are extraterrestrials engaging us. But that doesn't explain the whole picture, and it certainly doesn't negate the belief that there's also this spiritual thing going on that is completely different. And so I don't think there's any one hat fits all, and I think that we all need to be open to the possibility that one answer does not exclude another answer, and that's really the way forward.
Yeah, I guess, though, there's an element whereby when you're searching for truth, ultimately truth has to have an answer to whatever the question is.
I do agree with that. And when we're talking about subjective reality, I wasn't saying that multiple truths at that level probably exist, because I'm not sure that they do. I'm not a theologian. But I do feel that's a good point when we're talking about collective consensus reality and subjective reality, and how far does that go? Can there truly be multiple intense truths? I don't think that's a real interesting question.
Indeed. I mean, I've followed some of the work, certainly reported this side of the Atlantic, MUFON, over the years, and that was one of the criticisms that I saw leveled against it. Or not so much MUFON, but the whole sort of UFO community, whatever you want to call it, that it would very quickly sort of segue into either extreme skepticism on one side, or extreme forms of belief, which seem to be a kind of new religion almost, on the other side. And the debate was lost somewhere in between. Do you know what I'm saying, Ron? There's like these
totally
two polar opposites that just didn't, that there was no way of dialoguing between them.
Yeah, I want to see that change, because we have, we basically have this UFO community that what happens to these people is that they get so caught up in their own personal perception, and this happens a lot, it's not just you UFO people, you get so caught up in your personal perception that you're attached to an outcome, and then you're not willing to look at the broader possibilities, and that is rampant, throughout humanity. But it's going to take us looking at multiple possibilities. If this phenomenon is nothing more than trying to illustrate to us clues about the nature of our reality and our existence, then it's serving its purpose. And it's going to take a much broader, open-minded approach to really get through this.
I mean, in all the years that you've been researching, studying, and filming and writing about this, Ron, I mean, what's the conclusions that you've drawn from the whole, if we take it from the whole Second World War, from that trajectory onwards? I mean, is it a case that the government really do know that these creatures or some entity, some intelligence exists, that they have interacted with it, and they have just shielded us from that? Is that your ultimate belief?
That seems to be that seems to be what's going on. And again, there's been, we interviewed this guy in the film, John Alexander. This is a guy that that ran a whole lot of top secret government programs, looking into everything from near-death experiences to the kind of magic that's being done with ayahuasca by South American shamans, and a whole lot of portal type of stuff. And he's kind of a scary guy. He's been pictured with people running dark churches, and lots of rumors surrounding him. And this is all tied up inside government. And so and we also know that the Nazis were deep into all kinds of very, very strange occult practices and religions and things.
Yes, they were.
And so
yes.
it's just a very interesting thing. And then one of the people we have in the film, his name is Danny Sheehan. He was the attorney for the Jesuits for a long time. He's a very famous civil rights attorney. He's representing Lou Elizondo in court with the Defense Intelligence Agency, trying to get permission to talk more. But, you know, Danny went with President Jimmy Carter and Danny Sheehan and people at the White House went to the Pope. And again, he was the attorney for the Jesuits. He worked with the highest levels of the Catholic Church in America. They went to the Vatican on numerous occasions and asked for the Vatican archives on UFOs to get access to them. And 100% of the time they are denied. And I have to tell you that deep in the vaults of the Vatican are answers we seek. And they go back way beyond Roswell. They go back to the earliest recorded history of what's going on. And there is documentation there that would blow the lid off this whole thing if they would finally just share it.
Well, just listening to your honor, I heartily recommend you read Paul Thigpen's book. In fact, we have Paul on tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he touches on all of that. He touches on all the sort of papal pronouncements. But it's not just something in the 20th century. He goes way, way back to the very, very start. In fact, he goes back to the Old Testament and to Ezekiel, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and all the thinking around what was in some of the Jewish apocalyptic literature, which we call the Old Testament.
A lot of people say that Ezekiel describes the construction of a spaceship, and David, there's been several experiments to flesh that out. And so it's really interesting when Congressman Tim Burchett is in the film. He's a Tennessee congressman and he is a very, very deeply committed Christian. And one of the things that he says is that, even if the book of Ezekiel, since you brought it up, is rumored to be describing things that are physical, and that the idea that there's other extraterrestrial species does not need to clash in any way with religious values or beliefs. And
Not at all. In fact, Ron, I've said this many times in this show, we believe in extraterrestrials. We just call them angels or fallen angels. You know what I mean? So the Catholic understanding of these things, there's no problem with it, because for us, there's nothing to fear from it. Do you know what I mean? If there's an extraterrestrial source, well, fine, let's meet them. let's talk about them. But I'm kind of sort of interested. And it was something I talked to David J. Halperin yesterday, which was the kind of way in which the UFO phenomena has impacted on people's lives. And you touched on this a bit in what you were saying about MUFON and people who had experienced something. But he was very good in his book looking at the way in which a UFO incident has an influence or an impact, not just on those people who think they've seen something, but also on the people then who try to undermine what they've seen or try to ridicule it or whatever. And it's this idea that it is a phenomena that people are experiencing, even if you're denying it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, this is true. And, you know, the so-called experiencer phenomena has gotten so big that MUFON estimates that as many as 1 in 20 people have had some sort of an encounter with a non-human intelligence. And again, this could be an encounter this could be an angelic encounter. This could be a demonic encounter. It could be what they would define as an extraterrestrial encounter. It could be a spiritually transformative experience where something happens to you that creates such a powerful paradigm shift that you wake up with a completely new outlook on spirituality and your connection with God. That's the spiritually transformative experience, and that happens to people. And what we're finding is that, and you know, I guess that you in other religions you call that an epiphany. These things are happening, and they cannot be denied anymore. It's not like you can go, these people are all crazy, because we're finding out that they're not crazy. And another thing that we point out in the film is there's some new research that points to a part of the brain called the basal ganglia that has long been associated with heightened levels of perception, and that a lot of these people that are having these experiences have increased activity, increased growth, and increased apparent electrical function in the basal ganglia section of the brain. And the research suggests that there is a part of the human brain that is able to perceive and receive communications and frequencies that are not anything that we really understand yet. But that's how some of this stuff is manifesting, is that we are literally using parts of our brain that we don't understand to pick up, like antennas, pick up these things as they're happening.
We're coming to the end of our interview, unfortunately, Ron. I feel like we're just starting. I just want to ask you one quick question, and I'm afraid we've only got a couple of minutes left, because you touched on it. We live in an age of unbelief. You know, most people don't believe in anything these days, or they believe a vague idea that science or that sort of thing. Do you think somehow that maybe that, because I agree with you, this is a phenomenon which seems to be growing in terms of numbers, to people engaging with it, but is it a kind of a substitute for maybe what 200, 300, 400 years ago people would have engaged with as a religious experience?
I think that that's possible. I still think that there's a possible distinction between physical extraterrestrial aliens coming from other parts of the galaxy and angelic and demonic beings that are less physical and more ethereal coming to us from through other aspects. I think that there's room for both. And one thing that I really don't want to see is the idea that there's some sort of alien defined presence, and I see it happening in our field with a few people leading it, to almost turning it into another religion, because I think that's not a really great road to be walking down either. And I don't want to see one belief switched out for another, and I think that the most important part is realizing that we're spiritual beings here for whatever reason, and having that at least be the common ground that we can all build upon.
Amen. Ron, quickly tell people where they can find more about you and the film.
You can find the film. It's called Accidental Truth UFO Revelations. I think your audience would really like it, honestly. And you can find it on all the rental places, Amazon, Hulu, Apple TV, Google, iTunes, all that. And
excellent.
You can find out more about me at MUFON.com.
M-U-F-O-N. Thank you so much. Ron, thank you so much for taking time out today. It's been an absolute pleasure. When we come back, we'll be praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.